Herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Episode Forward Thinkers. Mein Name ist Daniel Fürk und mein heutiger Gast ist Cecilia Garaffo. Die Astrophysikerin leitet das Astro AI and Earth AI Institute, angesiedelt am renommierten Center for Astrophysics, einem gemeinsamen Forschungszentrum der Harvard University und dem Smithsonian. Sie arbeitet dabei direkt an der Schnittstelle von künstlicher Intelligenz und Weltraumforschung. Ihr Ziel? Mithilfe von Algorithmen nach außerirdischem Leben zu suchen und das Unbekannte im Universum sichtbar zu machen. Mit ihrem Team entwickelt sie Methoden, die Spektraldaten auswerten, atmosphärische Muster erkennen und Hinweise auf biologische Prozesse auf fernen Planeten liefern sollen. Ich habe sie im Rahmen des DLD Future Hub Events in München getroffen und wollte von ihr wissen, wie KI die Astrophysik verändert, welche Formen von Leben wir vielleicht als erstes entdecken werden und ob Maschinen am Ende die besseren Forscher sind. Wenn dir diese Episode von Forward Thinkers gefällt, folge uns bei Spotify, Apple Podcasts oder wo auch immer du gerne Podcasts hörst und hinterlasse uns eine gute Bewertung.
In an ever-changing world, we need to keep track of what will be next. Forward Thinkers is your 48 Forward podcast to discover the future. We are talking to innovative and creative minds from all over the world to learn more about what they are working on and what they think will change the way we work and live within the next decade. Are you ready to join the ride? Welcome to Forward Thinkers.
Cecilia, it's so great to see you here at the DLD event in Munich to talk about space and science and AI and everything in between. Welcome.
Thank you, Daniel. I'm very excited to be here and to speak with you about these things. So thank you for having me.
With all the topics you're working on and worked on over the last years, what are the most exciting things, the most fascinating things you figured out or learned in the last couple of years?
That's a tough one. It depends. Fascinating for who? For me, okay, it's not the same as fascinating for everybody else. One of the things that motivated me to do the work I'm doing right now is what I figured out is that the power of AI technology when it comes to astrophysics, in particular in these times where we're entering this era of big data in astrophysics. And so there's a lot of opportunity and there's a lot of things we're going to miss if we keep using only the traditional methods. And so AI gives us an opportunity not only to exploit the big data that we're going to get, but to, for the first time, and this is what excites me the most, look for the unexpected intentionally in the data. So with traditional methods, we used to find what we're looking for. You had to know what you were looking for in order to find it. Or sometimes we'd find new things by accident. But now with AI, we can look intentionally, ask design an algorithm that will give you new patterns that you don't know what those patterns are. And so in this context of getting orders of magnitude more data than we ever had, and that being observing more in 1 year than in all our history, then this becomes a great time to use this opportunity.
When was the point in time where you actually figured out that AI might have a big impact on your work?
I don't know exactly what that time was, but it was a bit in stages. So I came across neural networks for the first time in 2010 when I was doing my PhD in astrophysics. And, well, I was doing my PhD in theoretical physics. And I was in a university, in Brandeis University in the Boston area, where there was a huge neuroscience group. And then I joined the computational neuroscience group there just as a side thing, right? I was still doing my PhD in astrophysics. And that's when I came across neural networks in an attempt to explain how the brain works. And at that time, we didn't think, or at least I didn't think, that was going to be the main breakthrough in neuroscience. So I continued with astrophysics, but I did keep in mind how powerful these neural networks are, whether the brain works like that or not. And so I continued monitoring that because then I moved into computational astrophysics and eventually I got more and more interested in it. And at some point I decided to join the computer science department in Harvard to do just pure AI. And that's when I started to apply to astrophysics. I had the plan, but I didn't know how it would work. And first collaboration I did with an astrophysicist was with the Event Horizon Telescope, that they are the ones who resolved the first image of a black hole. And they're in the same institute that I am right now. So it's the Center for Astrophysics, Harvard and Smithsonian. And so I started collaborating with them when I was in computer science, and I saw how powerful that computer science astrophysics collaboration was. And that's, I think, when I finally realized this is the recipe.
So with Astro AI, you are trying to bring artificial intelligence at the core of astrophysics and everything connected to it. Where did you start actually to do that?
Well, that's when I went to this institute in Harvard that is part of computer science, and it was to do research on pure methods. And I always wanted to apply this to astrophysics. So I would say in that experience where I was studying the methods and doing research on the methods, but always inspired in astrophysical problems. For example, one thing that I really dived into was how to build uncertainty quantification, or what we call Bayesian neural networks, because those are important for science, because in science, any measurement without an error bar means nothing. And so that is when, yeah, so I would say when I decided to go to computer science and dive deep into methods is when I really started to apply these to astrophysics.
So your talk here at DLD is about, are we alone out there and how AI might help us to figure that out. Could you explain a little bit the impact of AI on that question?
Yes, absolutely. So that's an exciting project. We have many projects in Astro AI. That is one that people really like. So since 1995, we know that there are planets orbiting other stars that are not the sun. So we know that since 1991, but since 1995, we know that some of these planets orbit stars that are similar to the sun. And that's when we got excited and thought, okay, we call these exoplanets. Okay, are there other worlds out there like Earth or different, but that could host life potentially? And so since we discovered the first one, we started looking for them more and more. And right now we have already discovered over 5,000 confirmed exoplanets with a lot more candidates. The short summary of that is planets are everywhere and they are the rule and not the exception. So we think most stars have at least a planet around them. And there's hundreds of billions of stars in the galaxy and hundreds of billions of galaxies in the universe. So it's really hard to believe to me that we are alone, that we are the only planet in that sea of planets that has life. So the question is, how do we look for this life? And that's a challenging question, because it is one thing to believe there is life out there. Another thing is to detect it. So with James Webb Space Telescope, that is a fairly new telescope that is very powerful, we can for the first time now detect molecules on the atmosphere of these exoplanets. So this is crazy, right? You can detect tiny molecules on atmospheres of planets orbiting other stars. Just keep in mind that the closest star, and that is very close, is 4 light years away. So this is absolutely crazy. Now, how you do that is you look at the light that comes from the star when the planet is in front of it. And so that light has passed through the atmosphere of the planet, if the planet has an atmosphere. And so there will be these tiny imprints in that light. That is because the molecules in that atmosphere absorb some of the light. From the way the light is absorbed, you can in principle know which molecules are present in the atmosphere. But there's so many possibilities. There's different molecules, different abundances of each molecule that could be present. And there's different temperatures and pressures of the atmosphere that are possible. So these are millions of possibilities to match to each data that we get. We call them spectra. And so for traditional methods, that's really hard to match. And we do things that are very computationally expensive, like full probabilistic approaches like Markov chain Monte Carlo. That's a technicality. It doesn't matter, but that can take such a long time that it makes it impossible to search for enough combinations. And also, because you can only search for one or two molecules at a time in this traditional way, it doesn't give you really the full answer. And so with AI, AI is good to do inverse problems, right? We know, we have the capacity to know how this data would look for each composition of the atmosphere. But once we see the data, recovering the composition is a different, is an inverse problem that is very difficult to approach with traditional methods. And that's where AI can help. And that's what I'm working on, and we've been working on from the beginning of Astro AI. We build a model to do that, and yeah, we're working on expanding that to a lot more molecules that could indicate the presence of life. So we're looking for molecules that are called biosignatures, that if we find them, they could indicate that there's life on that planet. And so that's why we want to, from the data, know what molecules are present on the atmosphere.
If we look at the future, next maybe 10 years, you already talked about how AI kind of accelerated traditional methods. If we add quantum computing into that and connect AI, those methods, and quantum computing, what do you think? Would we then actually be able to figure out what's going on out there?
I think it's really hard right now to predict anything in time in 10 years. It's really hard. But yes, I think the methods will advance enough that we will be able to say a lot more about the data we have. But it's also important to have better data. So it's also, it depends a lot on what instruments will be built to answer this question. We are working on building instruments like the GMT and a particular instrument in there called GCLIF that could give us some information, but all this depends, you know, on funding and on if telescopes that are planned to be launched are launched or not. So it depends on a lot of factors, but I do think the advancement of the methods is accelerating in a way that I find it very hard to predict in 10 years. But I think we'll find a lot of things, and our knowledge will be dramatically changed in the next 10 years, if you ask me.
We are already talking about your personal views on that. So one more kind of a personal question to that. What do you think, what are we going to find first? Like kind of some life like bacteria and something, or is it actually going to be some more intelligent life, something like we are, or what do you think? What's going to be first?
Yeah, I think we're looking for both. I am particularly looking for any kind of life that I can imagine more like bacteria or microorganisms. I'm looking for evidence of life, any kind of life. And I imagine we're going to find that first. But there are efforts to look in a different way for intelligent life out there. And I don't know, because there are different, it's different ways of looking for it. I think it's probably more primitive kinds of life are more abundant. So I imagine it's easier to find them. And that's what I'm focusing on. So I would bet on that one being first.
Just like my view on that, like I'm not a physicist and not a scientist, but I would imagine that some more intelligent life would have a larger footprint on the planet. Like if we look at Earth, there is so much going on here because of us humans. So shouldn't they be easier to detect?
Some people think they should, and there's been a lot of efforts on that front. I think it's hard to know what more intelligent life would look like and what that footprint would be like. There's this idea that how a civilization advances just based on our own. So keep in mind, we only have one data point here and we're extrapolating. So I don't know if this applies, but some people think that there's like a bimodal population of less advanced life. And then once you start to advance, you advance so quickly that then it's easier to find very advanced kind of life than something in between. Us being probably in between, closer to the lower advancement. Some people think that the most advanced forms of life will not be biological, but that is because now we're seeing the advancement of AI. So it's hard to get away from what we're experiencing ourselves and extrapolate that in a sometimes maybe an unrealistic way, like the futuristic movies from the 70s that would have flying cars. So it's hard to know, but there are people looking for imprints in, we think that an advanced civilization will need energy. And so there's people looking for footprints of something absorbing the energy of the star that is the host star of these intelligent beings. I am not an expert on that, but nothing has been confirmed on that front yet. So I don't know which one. I think even if there's a calculation to be made there, right? Even if they're easier to find, if they're much less abundant, and depending on what technology we have, and that we don't really know what we're looking for, I think it's still easier to find primitive forms of life.
You are already working a lot with AI, and it became an essential part of your work. Do you think AI might actually replace human scientists over the next years? Because AI might become just much more capable of figuring stuff out and might come to a point where it kind of prompts itself, more or less, to go to the next step?
That's a hard question. I think definitely the job of a scientist is changing rapidly and will continue to change. For now, what we see is all the stuff we don't want to spend time on can be accelerated with AI. So that's a good thing, especially because we do need more scientists when we're getting a lot more data. So if we do this more efficiently, we'll just think about someone spending 24 hours to do data analysis of one astrophysical system. Just imagine that. And now we will have millions per night of those observations. We just don't have enough time or scientists. So for now, we're very far. I don't know in time, but we're very far in terms of amount of work and scientists from a situation in which we don't have any work to do. I think it is true that we're building models that are going to be able to come up with hypotheses, and that's a good thing, I think, for science. I don't know that scientists will be replaced. I think for now we're being empowered, and yeah, but it's hard to know what will happen in the future. It is hard. I think having AI finding out stuff that it can be explained would be amazing, not only for knowledge and discovery of basic science, but for applications into technology as well. So I think it could only be good in that sense. But yes, it's definitely a shift, maybe like the Industrial Revolution and changing all job descriptions in a way. Personally, I'm more motivated to know the answers than to find them. So I don't mind. I can do other work if all is figured out, I'd be happy. But I understand not all scientists might feel like this. I still think right now and for a while the humans are important. And that we should be the ones deciding the role of AI in every field of work. Hopefully we can figure that out in conferences like this one, for example.
Maybe we also figure out over the next years that there is still like a human spark and intuition that AI can't replace, especially in science, to maybe go into a whole different direction AI couldn't have come up with. And so let's see how this is going to work out in the end. Thank you so much for taking the time. And yeah, I wish you some wonderful days here in Munich. And I'm very excited to follow your work in the next couple of years and see what you're going to figure out next.
Thank you so much, Daniel. It was a pleasure to talk to you, and thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening. Did you enjoy the episode? Follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you prefer listening to your favorite podcast shows. Forward Thinkers is a 48 Forward podcast produced in the 48 Forward Studios in Munich.